Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Janita Go Premanande. So, tonight we will read through chapter 14. Chapter 14 is. It may be the smallest chapter in the whole Bhagavatam. There's only 11 verses. I don't think there's any chapter I can remember that's only 11 verses. So we'll read through the whole chapter. What is the chapter called?
The System of Universal Management.
Yeah, System of Universal Management. Okay. So we've heard in the beginning of the 8th canto about Gajendra Moksha, about Gajendra being liberated. We then heard about the demons and the demigods churning the ocean of milk. We heard about the appearance of Mohini Murti, how Mohini Murti bewildered the demons. Now we're hearing a brief description of the Manvantars. Chapter 13 described the six remaining Manvantar. Six remaining Manus. There were seven Manus described. Then the last seven have been described. So we're hearing about all of the Prajapatis, the progenitors of the universe. So tonight, there'll be a little bit more about, from the Manus, then who else appears to assist the Manus so that they can populate the universe.
Prajapatis?
The Prajapatis, the different Prajapatis and their assistants like that. So we'll do the whole chapter tonight, which is verses 1 to 11. Maharaj Parikshit inquired, "O most opulent Shukadev Goswami, please explain to me how Manu and the others in each Manvantar are engaged in their respective duties, and by whose order they are so engaged." Shukadev Goswami said, "The Manus, the sons of Manu, the great sages, the Indras, and all the demigods or king are appointed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his various incarnations, such as Jagya. O king, I have already described to you various incarnations of the Lord, such as Jagya. The Manus and others are chosen by these incarnations, under whose direction they conduct the universal affairs." So, Shukadev Prabhu, can you please?
"The Manus execute the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his various incarnations."
So, what are the points? Any other points?
The point extracted from here is possibly a devotee will always be a servant who will be executing the orders of the Lord, or Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Any other points? So, there is only one person in control of everything. Eko Bahunam, Yovidati Kama. There are many personalities in the creation, but one personality, he is in control of everything. That is Krishna. That is the Supreme Lord. So then, the question is asked, then why does he not just do everything by himself? Why doesn't he just create everything? And why does he get so many assistants? Create. Now, it is not that Krishna wants this material world to exist. The material world is not existing because of Krishna's desire. It is existing because of the other living entities who are his servants, the jivas. It is their desire. Man proposes, God disposes. So because they desire to enjoy separately, then he facilitates. So he doesn't do it directly, but he does it through the agency of the empowered representatives. So he gets the Manus, the Indras, and the different personalities to populate the universe on his behalf. Because Krishna himself is just an enjoyer. He's in the spiritual world, he's in Goloka, in his expansions as Narayan, he's in Vaikuntha, and he is simply enjoying. You'll notice in the spiritual world, there is no creation, there is no annihilation. So there's, in other words, there's no need for work or endeavor or activity. Everything is just maintained by the Lord's desire, by his will, by his potency. So therefore, there is no necessity for the material world to be, for the spiritual world to be created or destroyed. But in the material world, there is creation, there is destruction. So the Lord does not do it directly. Now, he doesn't need to create. He's enjoying his pastimes. That is his purpose. So he gets others to do it. Okay, if you want a material world, then you have to create it. I will give you the potency, I will give you the ingredients, the facility, but you have to do it. So he gives the others the opportunity. So the Manvantars, the Indras, the demigods, the sages, they populate the universe. They create the universe. It is then maintained by his representatives, the demigods, who are in the mode of goodness. And then it is destroyed by the Lord's agents, primarily by Lord Shiva. Then everything is destroyed. So the Lord himself does not directly engage in these activities. Just like if you're very wealthy, you don't have to go to work. There's no need to work. And you see some wealthy people, they don't work. Because there's no necessity. Other people, even though they're so wealthy, they still work. Because they're in the mode of passion. But there is no necessity. So the Lord, he is just an enjoyer. There's no need to work. So he lets other people do it. If you want to work, if you want to labor, because it will require great endeavor, then you go and do that. So the material world is not for the Lord's enjoyment. And it is not by the Lord's desire that the material world exists. It only exists because of the desire of the jivas. But he facilitates that. Okay, you want a place to enjoy separate from me, then I'll give it to you. I'll give you the ingredients. I will give you the ability to create it and everything. But he himself does not directly get involved. So any points?
Can we understand this way, like Lord Krishna is purely transcendental and made of complete love or so on. Therefore, when he tries to do a creation or maintenance or annihilation, it might be, there is no need for him to do, because it is again a material thing which is considered to be a, which is associated with the material world. Therefore, there will be some agents who will be of material nature to perform the actions on behalf of him. Since he is so transcendental, there is no need for him to come here or associate with these activities of the material world.
Yeah, he never directly contacts the material energy. It's just by his glance. Maya Yakshina Prakriti, Sri Sasa Charatra. Just by his glance, then the entire material world is taking place. So Krishna says in the Gita, I just glance at everything and then everything becomes evolved, or everything becomes created. So he does not directly contact the material world. There's no necessity for him to directly contact the material world. So, does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Any other points? at the end of every 4 yugas. The great saintly persons, upon seeing that the eternal occupational duties of mankind have been misused, re-establish the principles of religion. So, would have a bundle of problems.
Dharma and Sanadana are very important. Sanadana means eternal and Dharma means occupational duties. From Satya Yuga to Kali Yuga, the principles of religion and occupational duty gradually deteriorate. In Satya Yuga, the religious principles are observed in full, without deviation. In Treta Yuga, however, these principles are somewhat neglected, and only 3/4 of the religious duties continue. In Dwapara Yuga, only half of the religious principles continue. And in Kali Yuga, only 1/4 of the religious principles which gradually disappears. At the end of Kali Yuga, the principles of religion or the occupational duties of humanity are almost lost. Indeed, in this Kali Yuga, we have passed through only 5,000 years. Yet the decline of Sanatana Dharma is very prominent. The duty of saintly persons, therefore, is to take up seriously the cause of Sanatana Dharma and try to re-establish it for the benefit of the entire human society. The Krishna Consciousness Movement has been started according to this principle. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 12.351, Kale Dosa Nidhe Rajan Asti Eva Mahanguna Kirtana Eva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Parabrahma. The entire Kali Yuga is full of faults. It is like an unlimited ocean of faults. But the Krishna Consciousness Movement is very authorized. Therefore, following in the footsteps of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who 5,000 years ago inaugurated the movement of Sankirtana, Krishna Kirtana, we are trying to introduce this movement according to superior orders all over the world. Now, if the inaugurators of this movement strictly follow the regulative principles and spread this movement for the benefit of all human society, they will certainly usher in a new way of life by re-establishing Sanatana Dharma. The eternal occupational duties of humanity, the eternal occupational duty of the human being is to serve Krishna. Jivera Swarupa Haya Krishnera Nityata. This is the purport of Sanatana Dharma. Sanatana means Nitya or eternal, and Krishna Dasa means servant of Krishna. The eternal occupational duty of the human being is to serve Krishna. This is the sum and substance of the Krishna Consciousness Movement.
So what are the points? So, it has been predicted within the Shastra that there would be a 10,000 year golden age, which began 500 years ago with the advent of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Kali Yuga, naturally, everything in the material world naturally devolves in due course of time. So we see that as time has gone by, gradually everything is going down, and religion becomes less and less. Now we see that in the beginning of the Satya Yuga, the four principles of religion are prominent. So what are the four principles of religion? Yeah, there is cleanliness, there is compassion, there is austerity, and there is truthfulness, like that. So in the beginning of the Satya Yuga, the four are very prevalent. And then it says that with each yuga passes, it reduces by 25%. So then the world becomes less religious, less dharmic. And then by the time you get to the beginning of the Kali Yuga, it is said that it is only 25% of the original dharma within the human society is left. So at the beginning of Kali Yuga, now we're only in the beginning now. And Prabhupada is saying that only 5,000 years have passed. So for a 432,000 year age, 5,000 years is just the very beginning. But already Prabhupada said you can see there is such a deterioration. In these 5,000 years it has decreased so much. And we see practically in the last 100 years, we've seen a decrease in religion or dharma more than ever before, right? Because of industrialization in the last, and even you can say in the last 50 years, since the 1960s, you see from the 50s to the 60s, there was a great degradation of human society because of industrialization and because of electronic gadgetry or
television.
By media, basically. So much development. And then you see even in the last 10 years how much it has become. I remember when I joined the movement around about 25 years ago, there wasn't any mobile phones. Right? And in the last 15 years or so, they invented them. In the last 20 years, they invented them. And now everyone has them. Even kids have them. 10-year-old kids, they have mobile phones. The parents pay for the accounts and everything. You see, everyone's just texting all the time. So now, the contamination of Kali Yuga is powerful. And the internet is so powerful, and television and media are so powerful now. And there's so much contamination. And you see, practically day by day, Dharma is being reduced. You know, 25% was there at the beginning of Kali Yuga, but it's been decreased greatly. And this is only the beginning. And as Kali Yuga increases or continues, you'll see the degradation take place much quicker. Now it says that in the Kali Yuga, in the beginning, there is a 10,000 year golden period. So that began 500 years ago. So if that had not begun, Kali Yuga would be going much quicker than what it is now. If you read in the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, at the end of the Bhagavatam, there is a description of the end of Kali Yuga. And it says that human beings are only 3 or 4 foot tall. And everyone is black. And everyone is a cannibal. And everyone eats each other. And you cannot see the sun anymore. And there is no rain. And there are no trees. And there is no rivers. So you can imagine what it must be like. To some degree. So this sounds like after nuclear holocaust. Now, there's probably been a number of nuclear wars. Next 400,000 years, they probably blow everything up a number of times. And everything just becomes infertile. So life becomes demoniac. It becomes very, and there is practically no dharma. Near the end of the Kali Yuga, there's practically no dharma. No one even follows anything. Practically, everyone just eats each other. Right? Bhagavatam says people eat their children. That's what happens. Kali Yuga becomes so degraded. This is a reduction of dharma. And then the sages, the Lord himself, Kalki, comes. He regenerates everything. And the sages come and then dharma begins again. But the nature of the material world is that everything gradually decreases like that. Because as we said before, the jivas are the cause of the material world. The Lord does not cause it. The jivas cause it. And what happens when the jivas leave Krishna, when they become nichabuddha, or they rebel against Krishna's service, then what takes place? They get themselves into trouble. Just like you see any person, even a good person, without authority, they get themselves into trouble. Just like if you leave your kids for 1 week, what will happen? Most likely they'll just get themselves into trouble. And imagine if you leave all the kids unattended, right? You see, when children are unattended, basically they get up to mischief, usually. So that is what the living entity is like. He leaves Krishna, and then he goes to his own devices, and then he just ruins everything. And the material world becomes a mess, and then the Lord has to fix it again, and then it all goes down again. So that is the nature of the material creation. Now, Prabhupada says in the purport that if the inaugurators of this movement strictly follow the regulative principles and spread this movement for the benefit of all human society, they will certainly usher in a new way of life by re-establishing Sanatana Dharma. So that is our mandate, or that is our mission. It is given to us by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya, he says in the Adi Lila of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he says that I am like a gardener and I am harvesting the fruits of love of Godhead. But I am just one person, and one person cannot give out so many fruits. So I need assistance. So he says, please all of you help me. So the duty of all the living entities is to help the Lord. The duty of the Krishna consciousness movement is to help Krishna distribute the fruits of love of God, to distribute bhakti to everyone in this material world. Now, how is bhakti spread? As Prabhupada says here, basically he's saying purity is the force. This is like these four... Yeah. So this was not actually invented by Prabhupada, but he said it is okay. It was actually coming from something else. It might have been a Chinese saying or something like that. But books are the basis, purity is the force, utility is the principle, and what is the other one? These four sayings. Preaching is the essence of that. So these are the four fundamental principles of ISKCON. You can say Prabhupada said, yes, this is applicable to ISKCON. That Prabhupada says purity is the force. Prabhupada says here in the purport, we have to strictly follow the regulative principles. If devotees do not follow the regulative principles, there's no purity and the movement cannot spread. So we have to follow the regulative principles, which at the time of initiation were given five instructions. One is positive, four are negative. Four do nots, prohibitions, they are called nisheda. Right, and one viti. Viti means you must do it. Rule. So one thing is you chant 16 rounds minimum every day. Right? That is how the movement will spread. One becomes potent by chanting. Just like His Holiness Stephen Rita Swami arrived tonight in Melbourne. So I think I'm pretty sure Maharaj chants 32 rounds every day. That is his system for many years. So purity is the force. By chanting, we're given, Prabhupada said, at least 16 rounds. That is the minimum. By doing that, you develop purity. And then you develop potency. So you can imagine how potent Maharaj must be if he's chanting 32 rounds every day. And I've heard him say that he likes to chant in one block. Like that. So he gets up early in the morning and just chants. Like that. So much purity is developed from his pure chanting of the holy name, and then he has purity. And you see how effective he is in his preaching. So purity is the force. And we must follow the regulative principles which are given. Because if one does not follow those principles, one develops the negative quality. If one eats meat, then compassion is destroyed. If one does not eat meat, one can develop real compassion. That is why Prabhupada emphasized this point so much. You see, whenever Prabhupada preached to the Christian people, the Western people, he always emphasized this point. Thou shalt not kill. Why are you killing the animals? Prabhupada would always emphasize this point. You know, that famous video with the cardinal in France. And Prabhupada is just sticking on that point. Why do you eat the animals? Why do you kill the animals? Because you cannot develop real compassion if one is eating meat. So if one eats meat, one destroys compassion, real compassion. Just like in the Vatican, they have an abattoir. Supposed to be the seat of religion for the whole Catholic religion, huge religion. But they have abattoir, killing the animals inside the Vatican. They don't want to get the meat from outside, they want to get fresh. So therefore they kill And so where is real compassion? It's not real compassion. They speak of compassion. The Pope speaks of compassion. But he has no real understanding because they do not protect the animals. So a real guru, and Veda Vyas Puri Maharaj was describing this in Fiji last week when he was speaking. I think it might have been on Tamal Krishna Maharaj's Vyasa Puja Day. But he was saying, he gave a class about the meaning of guru because it was Vyasa Puja. So he spoke about guru. And he said that guru means one who sees all living entities equally. That is guru. You know, because if the guru sees one living entity as superior to another, then that is maya, that is illusory vision. That is not Pandit Samadarshana. Pandit Samadarshana means you see all living entities the same, equal. That is the qualification for one to become a spiritual master. So the Pope is the guru for the whole church, but he cannot see all the living entities equally. Therefore, it is not real compassion. It's not spiritual vision. So therefore, one must follow meat eating. And then illicit sex means it destroys purity. Purity is the force. Purity means internal cleanliness, external cleanliness. So illicit sex, it destroys external cleanliness, but especially internal cleanliness. One cannot understand one's spiritual nature because it binds one to the bodily concept of life. Pumsastriya maituni bhavamitam, which means that one will see if one is too much involved or absorbed in sex life, which you can see the modern world is, everything is about sex life in the modern world, then you cannot understand your actual spiritual nature because you are absorbed in the consciousness that I am man or I am woman. And that is what binds everyone in this material world. It's the bodily concept of life. So it destroys purity or inner spiritual realization. One's consciousness becomes contaminated. Then one cannot understand the truth. So one must abstain from illicit sex, which is difficult in Kali Yuga. Even for initiated devotees, they find that difficult. Whenever devotees come to you for counseling, right, they never come and say, oh, I'm having trouble with gambling or intoxication or meat eating. It's always illicit sex. So this is the most difficult thing in the material world for people to overcome, the gross anatta of sex desire. So it destroys purity within the consciousness. It destroys one's inner realization. One's spiritual nature is covered. And then, intoxication. It destroys, which quality?
Austerity,
yeah. You cannot be austere. Austere means sense control or mind control. If you take intoxication, you cannot control yourself. Therefore, we're told we have to avoid intoxication. Right? So therefore, we don't take drugs, we don't take alcohol, we don't take cigarettes. But then it becomes even more refined. Devotees are so strict, we don't even take tea and coffee. You know? Very strict. That's very strict for the material world. Non-devotees find that very difficult. You cannot even drink tea or coffee. You see that the non-devotees, they become addicted to these small substances. But then it destroys austerity. It means you cannot control the mind or the senses. And Rupa Goswami says, if you can't control the mind or the senses, the vegans, you can't make advancement in spiritual life. So then even it comes down to chocolate. It becomes more subtle. Like that. So basically that divides the whole Hare Krishna movement. Mm-hmm. Right? There's two Hare Krishna movements. The ones that eat chocolate and the ones that don't eat chocolate. That's basically what divides everyone. Either you're in one camp or you're in the other camp. Right? Even though Prabhupada was asked, actually, and Prabhupada said, we should not eat the chocolate. He was asked. But then the GBC passed a law that we cannot eat the chocolate. But I know the GBC members who eat the chocolate. So even half the GBC is divided. Even our gurus are divided. Right? So this is how subtle the point is. So the point is that we have to control our senses and our mind, which means there has to be austerity. So one has to learn to control. That's why it's said one cannot take the food which is not offered to Krishna. Because Prabhupada explains that if you take the food which is not offered to Krishna, then the mind becomes wicked. And you see that devotees become very lax on this point. Food which is not offered to Krishna, they take that food. Very common. Very common. But then if you're taking the food which is not offered to Krishna, which is prepared by the non-devotees, it contaminates the consciousness. So therefore, devotees, they have to be strict. And we know most of the grihasthas are not that strict. Most of the grihasthas, they have breakfast cereal. Many of the grihasthas have bread which is prepared by the non-devotees, just their commercial bread like that. Some grihasthas are very strict. They won't even have those things. But most grihasthas, they have biscuits and they have those things. Because you have kids and time is difficult, so they just buy those things like that. But it does have some subtle contamination on the consciousness. So therefore, one is meant to be strict. One is meant to have control of the senses. Then one can become austere. And austere means you only use the senses in the service of Krishna. Because in the Hare Krishna movement, there's not really any austerity anyway. In one sense there is, but in another sense it's very easy. Because Prabhupada said, our fasting is feasting, and our feasting is fasting. So where's the austerity? Like that. What is the austerity? You don't eat food which is not offered to Krishna. Just like I just spent the week in Fiji, and it was just like a prasadam festival. Honestly, it was a festival. It was like breakfast feast, lunch feast, evening feast, every day for 7 days. So it wasn't like we had a Sunday feast. It was like everything was just a feast. That's all we're doing. It was like being in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. Devotees were just feasting. It was non-stop. It was like feast and feast and feast and feast. And then in between feasting, we just chant. We just do big kirtan and then we just stop. And describes in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, it was like that. Big kirtan. And then when everyone was fatigued, feast. And then take again. And Prabhupada says, this is Lord Chaitanya's formula. So where is the austerity? Prabhupada said, the feasting is fasting. The fasting is feasting. So where is the austerity? The austerity is we don't eat the food which is not offered to Krishna. For 1 week we did not touch anything which was not offered to Krishna. So that develops austerity. So what is austerity? Austerity means that we're controlling our senses, because the senses are only meant to be used in Krishna's service. Sarvapati dinirmuktam. Taparatvena Nirmalam. Rishikena, Rishikesha, Sevana Bhakti Uchite. The senses are only meant to be used in the service of Krishna. And then the final quality is no meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. Gambling destroys truthfulness. So this is the quality which is also gradually being destroyed as Kali Yuga is progressing. So truthfulness is necessary. The Bhagavatam says in the very first verse, Param Satyam Dimihi. Param Satyam. Satya means truth. Param Satyam means the absolute truth. So the devotees are interested in understanding the absolute truth. In the material world, everyone is interested in relative truth. But relative truth is not the essential point. But we must follow the principle of no gambling. No gambling means we do not use that which is not our property, because everything, according to Ishapanishad, everything belongs to Krishna. So when you gamble, you don't actually have a right, because that is Krishna's property. And then you are gambling that away. If you lose that, then you've lost Krishna's property, not your property. So therefore, we are taught not to gamble. Why? Because we understand everything belongs to Krishna. That is the absolute truth. That is truthfulness. So you can't develop that state of consciousness of the absolute truth that everything belongs to Krishna if you are gambling. You don't have a right to gamble. Now, it's interesting. I think if you go to the paraphernalia room, I'm pretty sure if you just go inside, and on the left, I think there's a little letter by Prabhupada. And does anyone remember? Is it still there? On the wall? It used to be outside. You know, just before you go up the stairs to Prasadam, there's a letter which Prabhupada wrote in 1966. And he wrote to everyone in ISKCON. So back in 1966, there wasn't that many devotees in ISKCON. Probably only 50 devotees or something. But he says to everyone, he says to all initiated members, which means everyone in ISKCON. So he says everyone has to abstain from meat eating, illicit sex, intoxication, gambling. When he gets to gambling, Prabhupada says, gambling and frivolous sports. It means engaging in activities which are not connected to Krishna. Frivolous, just being frivolous. You know, doing these things, which will take you away from Krishna. So it's not just about gambling money, it's been gambling your time. In other words, it's wasting your time. Like sometimes devotees, they get caught up on video games. I don't know if any of you do it or not, but one devotee, he wrote to me a while ago, and he said to me, Prabhu, I am attached to playing video games. What can I do? So I wrote back to him and I said, just reduce it over time, gradually reduce it like that, and one day you'll give up your attachment. So Prabhupada said we have to be frivolous sports. Means don't waste your time on frivolous things. You can do a little bit. Just like the boys, they go and play on Sunday, they still do that. They don't do it anymore. They're so staunch now. They don't have time. To stop them? Not to stop them. Like that. Yeah. So devotees can play. They can go and play some. They used to play cricket. The boys used to play on the Sunday. So devotees can play something. Yeah, you can go and have some fun with your friends. There's no harm in that. But not when it becomes too serious. You know, just like that at the moment, the whole world's watching the
World Cup.
Yeah, that's an example of taking it too seriously. Right, it's just a game. You know, you can just go and have some fun with your friends, but you don't make a whole thing of it. But they do. It becomes too much. Everyone becomes too absorbed with that.
Today one of my colleagues did not come because his team lost yesterday.
Which country?
Not sure, I think he was supporting Portugal.
So it's an idea of taking it too seriously. Right? Should not become that serious like that. You know, I mean, it's like, it's just a game. You know, you can have some game and have some fun, but not when it becomes absorbing all your time and then you don't have time for Krishna consciousness. That's the point. People say all the time, just like I know some of my family members, I'm trying to encourage them to take to Krishna consciousness. They say, oh, we don't have so much time. Have you got time to watch the World Cup? You know, they won't get up at 4 in the morning for Mangalati. But they get up at 4 in the morning to watch the match. The World Cup, they do it. I know, they get up 4 o'clock in the morning. But if I say to them, get up and chant, they say, oh, no time. I say to them, just chant one or two rounds a day. Oh, no time. Like that. But they have time for every other thing. No? So Prabhupada is making the point that gambling means using your time or your energy or your money. It's meant to be used in Krishna's service. So when you, because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, don't work too much, don't work too little. Don't rest too much, don't rest too little. Don't eat too much, don't eat too little. Don't recreate too much, don't recreate too little. So devotees can have some recreation, there's no problem with that. But when it becomes too much, that's the problem. So this is when it means gambling. So these four things, they destroy devotional service. You lose compassion, you lose truthfulness, you lose austerity, and you lose... What's the other one?
Truthfulness,
austerity,
mercy,
purity.
And purity. Yeah, you lose these things. And these qualities are essential if you want to advance in Krishna consciousness. You don't become compassionate, you don't become pure, you don't become truthful, and you don't become austere. You cannot advance. They're essential qualities. So therefore, everyone has to develop those qualities. So Prabhupada is saying here in the purport that the way ISKCON is spread is when devotees follow these principles strictly, they become purified, and then they can have potency to spread Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, if you preach, but you're not following these things, you don't have any potency. Or in due course, you may have potency, and people may be, but in due course, don't people find out you're not following these things? They lose faith. And all your preaching is ruined. So, any points?
My colleague was telling that they go into difficulty and then they go into intoxication. Just to say to me, you don't know what you're missing really in your mind.
Yeah, but they can't say that because we did all those things.
No, from their sense, but I was thinking myself, you don't know what you're going to miss. So, they're misusing the human form of life. So, at least that's a gift of the Lord.
Yeah, but people just say, sometimes people say, you're missing out. But, you know, I just say to them, I did that. I had meat eating, I had illicit sex, I had intoxication, I had gambling. And now I don't have it and I'm happier, so... You can't say because you've not done both. You try this and then you can say. But you have no experience. Yeah, that's all you know. But I did everything you did. You know, and it didn't make me happy, so what can you say? So they say, you don't know what you're missing out. Yeah, I know what you're missing out because I gave it up. Because I used to do the same stupid things you do every day. Right? And now I give it up, so I do know. So don't tell me, you know. So you just say to them, you try this, and then you have some. You know, come and live in the temple for 1 week, right, and then see. Then you can pass judgment. Okay. Thereafter, O King, the Manus, being fully engaged according to the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, directly re-establish the principles of occupational duty in its full four parts. So read the purport, Chaitanya Prabhu.
Dharma or occupational duty can be established in its full four parts as explained in Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita 4.1, the Lord says, Imam Vishwaswate Yogam Proktavam Aham Abhyayam Vishwasvam Manave Paraha I instructed this incorruptible science of yoga to the sun god Vivaswan, and Vivaswan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu in turn instructed it to Ishvaku. This is the process of disciplic succession. Following the same process, the Krishna consciousness movement is teaching the principles of Bhagavad Gita as it is, without deviation, all over the world. If the fortunate people of this time accept the instruction of Lord Krishna, they will certainly be happy in Sri Krishna, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted everyone, at least in India, to become a preacher of this mission. In other words, one should become a guru and preach the Lord's instructions all over the world for the peace and prosperity of humanity.
So Prabhupada is emphasizing this chapter that it is the duty of the Krishna consciousness movement to save humanity. And Prabhupada actually says it's in one of the purports here. Prabhupada says that particularly if you are an Indian, if you're born in India, then that is your duty, is to preach Krishna consciousness. This is coming from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He said anyone born in the Bharat Bhasha right, directly into the land of India, it is your duty to preach Krishna consciousness for humanity. And we're seeing that's practically what's happening. The Indians are becoming devotees all over the world. Now, which is interesting, because when Prabhupada was on the planet, it was very difficult for him to make Indians into devotees. Now, when Prabhupada was on the planet, the movement did not take off in India so much. But since he's left, now practically all the Indians are becoming devotees all over the world. So it is the duty for any member of the Krishna consciousness movement, on Lord Chaitanya's order, Yari Deke Tahari Kahari Krishna Upadesh Amara Agyaya Guru Hana Tahari Desh. Everyone must become a guru. Guru means you have to teach others about Krishna. So there's the duty of everyone in this Krishna consciousness movement. So Prabhupada, all through this chapter, he is emphasizing this point that we need devotees to become strong in Krishna consciousness so that they can preach. Prabhupada, he said one time, he said, we want Arjuna or we want no one. So devotees should be like Arjuna. Arjuna was powerful in Krishna consciousness. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he says in his purports on Chaitanya Bhagavat, he said that Krishna consciousness is still on the earth now, 5,000 years after Krishna left, because of the Pandavas. Because the Pandavas spread it throughout India and even beyond India. Just like you see in, where is the biggest Vaishnava temple on the earth? No, where's the biggest? Where's the biggest temple on the earth? Vishnu temple. Yeah, it's in Cambodia. Angkor Wat. So what's it doing in Cambodia? Because the Pandavas spread it. So back then, thousands of years ago, if you go to Angkor Wat in Cambodia, it's the biggest temple. Huge temple. What's that?
Vishnu.
Yeah, Vishnu temple. Yeah, they discovered it. When they discovered it 70 years ago, they thought it was a Buddhist temple. But it's actually a Vaishnava temple. It's a Vishnu temple.
One side of the temple is carved with
Ramayana
and one side with the
Mahabharata stories. Yeah, they have bas reliefs, carvings all around of Ramayana, Mahabharata. So it's a huge temple. So how did they get there? Right? Now, in the world, how many countries are Hindu? Primarily Hindu. Only a few. Right? And which one is closest to Australia is a Hindu country? Right, Bali, right, which is just above Australia. Right? So that's a long way from India. But the Pandavas, they spread Krishna consciousness all through. So you see Singapore. Singa, lions, Pura city. So Singapore is a long way from. And then even further, if you go through Indonesia to Bali, I went to Bali last year. If you go to Bali, it's all Hindu. Right? Hindu sculptures and carvings everywhere. Right? I mean, it's all mixed up. It's all lost. But the point is that it is spread. So Prabhupada said, we want Arjuna or we want no one. Because the Pandavas spread Dharma, it is still here on the earth. If the Pandavas had not spread it so powerfully, right, it would not still be present. But we're seeing it's all over the earth still. Why? Right? Because the Pandavas, they were powerful. So similarly, when the devotees become powerful or strong in Krishna consciousness, they can spread Krishna consciousness all over the earth. And you see, that's what Prabhupada did. Prabhupada was like Arjuna. Prabhupada said, I want the benediction to die on the battlefield, fighting for Krishna like Arjuna until my last breath. So that is the mood of the devotees. So we also have to become like that. Pandava Sen. We have to become soldiers in the Sankirtana and spread the Krishna consciousness movement. So, any points?
Even in Thailand, like they perform all the Ramayana activities. Though they don't know the basic thing, but they have all the roads, Rama 4, Rama 3, Ayodhya, everything. Ayodhya also they have.
City called Ayodhya. Even in Bali, we have got stuff, Ramayana, name, etc. And they do Ramas every night,
or
the weekends on
Ramayana Mahamara. Yeah. Yeah, you drive out of the airport in Bali and on the traffic island, there's a huge statue of Ram and Ravan fighting. The statue's massive. It's the biggest Prabhupada house, nearly. Huge, huge, huge statue like that. So it is there. The culture is there. It's coming from... Even Prabhupada flew over Australia. He said, Australia. Mm-hmm. This is where the Pandavas or the warriors, the Chhatris, used to come and practice their Astras. Australia, like Himalaya. Australia. So you see, Australia in the middle is desert. It never used to be like that. But now it's all desert because the Pandavas came and some Chhatris came, they practiced the Astras and then everything became desert. And Brahmastras and these powerful weapons. Even in the 1960s, the British government, they practiced the nuclear weapons, the atom bomb, out in the desert in Australia. Because it's so much land out there, they went and blew up the bombs. So the Chhatris used to come in the past thousands of years ago and practice the weapons, and that's when everything used to be a nice country.
Because of the wonderful airport, after the immigration, before you enter the airport, you get this turning the ocean, this huge sculpture.
Where is that?
Thailand. It's the airport, the new airport.
Bangkok.
There is the mount
Mayor.
There, and then and the Vasuki. It's
there, it's demons, it's there.
They're all
life-size.
Very long.
Yeah, all coming from the Pandavas when they spread. Okay. To enjoy the results of sacrifices, yagyas, the rulers of the world, namely the sons and grandsons of Manu, discharge the orders of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Until the end of Manu's reign. The demigods also share the results of these sacrifices. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that the duty of the Kshatriyas, these days we don't have Kshatriyas, but you can say the managers. If someone's a manager in ISKCON, their duty is to maintain the brahmanas. Certain devotees amongst the community, they're brahmanas, like Burujan Prabhu and Veda Vyas Maharaj. They're brahmanas. So the managers in ISKCON, their duty is to maintain them so that they can preach and guide everyone else. And it is also the duty of the kshatriya to make sure that everyone in society is performing yogya. So the duty of the managers in ISKCON is to make sure all the devotees in ISKCON are doing yagya, which in Kali Yuga means Sankirtan. To make sure Sankirtan is going on, Sankirtan is going on, it's going on. So that is the duty. So previously we had good government. Yudhishthira was there and Parikshit was there. And they made sure the brahmanas are protected, right? And yagya is being performed. So that is the duty of the managers in ISKCON. Make sure yagya is being performed, make sure that the brahmanas are being protected and facilitated. And then ISKCON becomes auspicious. Human society becomes auspicious when these activities are maintained. Brahmanas are maintained and yagyas are maintained. But when they're not, then everything becomes inauspicious. You see ISKCON also, just like... Even one of the temples in Fiji, I just visited a few days ago. 5 years ago, 10 years ago, the temple was not being run very well. Right? And preaching was not going on, and you know these things were taking place. But then the devotees have come in, some strong devotees, some of my god brothers, strong devotees, they've come in, and they've re-managed the whole place. And now the preaching is going on, the yagya is going on. And Brahminical activities are taking place. So this is the duty of the managers in ISKCON to make sure that these things are being kept. And then everything becomes auspicious. Otherwise everything becomes very inauspicious. Right. And the whole thing just becomes watered down. And the whole purpose of ISKCON is lost. And Prabhupada says in the purport that the duty of everyone in ISKCON is to preach vigorously. One time a devotee said to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, how do we repay you?" Prabhupada said, "You cannot." But he said, "If you want to try, then you must preach vigorously like me." So Prabhupada gave that example. He was vigorous in his preaching to the very end of his life. Vigorous means he put energy into it. So we must also put energy into the preaching until the end of our life. And then that can help to repay the debt that we owe to the Guru. Any points? Indra, King of Heaven, receiving benedictions from the Supreme Personality of Godhead and thus enjoying highly developed opulences, maintains the living entities all over the three worlds by pouring sufficient rain on all the planets. In every yuga, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, assumes the form of siddhas, such as Sanak, to preach transcendental knowledge. He assumes the form of great saintly persons, such as Yajnavalkya, to teach the way of karma. And he assumes the form of great yogis, such as Dattatreya, to teach the system of mystic yoga. So Prabhupada explains in the purport that the duty of the devotees is to preach on behalf of Krishna. Whatever we are teaching is simply the teachings of Krishna. Evam parampara praptam imam rajyashi yogidu. Everything we're doing is just parampara. Right? Whatever we speak, it is parampara. What does parampara mean? Yeah, it's just a specific succession. Prabhupada says, do not change anything.
As it is.
As it is. Yeah. It means, Prabhupada says, repeat it in your own words. But do not change the purport. Do not change the meaning. So that is our qualification as preachers. We don't change anything. We can explain it in our own way, but the essence must remain the same. So Prabhupada is explaining like that. The devotees in ISKCON, they must follow parampara. Right? Do not deviate. Right? And in the courses, like this course that we're teaching here, at the beginning of the year, we always go through the 12 aims of Shastric study. Right? And we have the class norms, which we cover. So one of the norms is that the devotees do not change the message. If I start saying something which is not bona fide, it is the student's responsibility to pick it up. Then you have to go to the temple authorities. You have to say, they're teaching in this course, but they're not teaching the bona fide thing. That is the responsibility of everyone, right, to make sure the teachings are not changed. You have to repeat the message as it is. So that is our qualification. Otherwise we have no reason to speak or no right to speak. Our only qualification to speak is we do not change anything which we heard from our spiritual master. If you change anything, then you become useless. You become disconnected. You break, you lose your connection to the parampara and you lose your potency. And we've seen that over the years in ISKCON. When people deviate from the message, they lose their potency. And it's happened in the past. People were very powerful preachers, but they lost their potency because they began to deviate. Any points? Okay. In the form of Prajapati Marichi, the Supreme Personality of Godhead creates progeny. Becoming the king, he kills the thieves and rogues. And in the form of time, he annihilates everything. All the different qualities of material existence should be understood to be qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. People in general are bewildered by the illusory energy, and therefore they try to find the absolute truth, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, through various types of research and philosophical speculation. Nonetheless, they are unable to see the Supreme Lord. So we'll read the purport, Janeshwar. You can read the...
Whatever action under the creation takes place for the creation, maintenance and annihilation of this material world are actually brought about by one supreme person. There are many varieties of philosophers trying to search for the ultimate cause under different names and forms, but they are unable to find the supreme personality of Godhead Krishna, who explains in Bhagavad Gita that he is the origin of everything and the cause of all causes. Aham Sarvasya Prabhava. This inability is due to the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord. Devotees therefore accept the Supreme Personality Godhead as he is and remain happy simply by chanting the glories of the Lord.
So Prabhupada said that the process of Krishna consciousness is simple for the simple, complicated for the complicated. So if we are simple, everything remains simple. So the process is simple, and we have to keep the process simple. Don't complicate things. Don't make it difficult. It's very simple. You can go back to Godhead easily. Just like I was there in Fiji for a week, and we just followed the simple process. Basically, we just took prasadam, and we chanted. That's all we did. And we were in ecstasy. Devotees were in ecstasy. I haven't done so much chanting for years. Just kirtani, kirtani, kirtani. 6 hours a day, 7 hours a day, just kirtani, non-stop. Kirtani aha sadahari. Right? And then when you're tired, take prasadam. And then more chanting, more chanting. Simple process. If you follow the process inoffensively, you will get the result. Prema dham. The result, which is love for Krishna. You could see the devotees were ecstatic. They were going mad. And Krishna's mad. Devotees, after some time in the kirtan, they start getting the mad look in their eyes. The devotees were becoming like mad, intoxicated. Just intoxicated. This is one devotee, I don't even know his name. But I was over there, and then the devotee leading the kirtan was there, so he was dancing. And he kept like, he pointed at that devotee and then he pointed at me. And he pointed at that devotee and then he pointed at me. He was doing this for like 10 minutes. He was just mad. He was just going. And then he go. He was mad. Completely like madman. No control. Just doing it. He, the look in his eyes was just like mad. It's like completely intoxicated. But that is the process of Krishna consciousness. Right? You fully absorb yourself in the simple process. Right? And you will get love of God. Which is characterized by madness. Because you see who is the leader of the Sankirtan movement. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Or we could say second in charge is... Who's second in charge? First is Lord Chaitanya, second is... Nityananda. Right? You read the descriptions in Chaitanya Bhagavat. Lord Nityananda's kirtans are mad. Completely mad. Right? Devotees would go up to the trees in the middle of the kirtan and pick up the trees just go, and drop them on the ground. Right? And then just keep... That's Lord Nityananda's kirtans. That's what it was like in Fiji. Devotees, they're becoming like that, like mad. And there's like madness in Krishna consciousness. Now this is the goal, prema dham. And when you become absorbed in Krishna, you become ecstatic. That is the process. So, okay, one more verse. In one kalpa, or one day of Brahma, that there take place the many changes called vikalpas. O king, all of these have been previously described to you by me. Learned scholars who know the past, present, and future have ascertained that in one day of Brahma there are 14 manus. Srila Prabhupada ki. So apparently His Holiness Devamrita Swami is giving class tomorrow night across the road. So I think we will have to attend that class. I think we will not have Bhakti Vedanta class tomorrow night. But I think everyone will go for Devamrita Swami's class. So no class tomorrow night, and then next Monday we'll get back to our practical subject also. Srila Prabhupada, key. Sorry.